T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
I talked about doing it right. There's a guy who has done a lot of things right over the course of his major league career, and he did something very right last week when he was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. Joining us right now, what a pleasure and an honor to talk to the newest Hall of Famer for the Red Sox, Jim Rice. Jim, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Michael. How you guys doing?
Man, I'm doing great. And TC is here telling all kinds of Jim Rice stories and how you guys got them hooked up. You got them hooked up with P.F. Chang's. They come, they do anything that Jim Rice tells them to do.
Well, P.F. Chang is great, but we got the Dunkin' Donut hookup. That's what we got.
That's exactly.
We walk for Dunkin'. We got that.
This is the best thing about working with a Hall of Famer. When we have day game after night game, you know, you always hear players complain about day game after
right.
night game. We're back in there next day. He's on the phone, and the coffee and the donuts and the cookies are on the way.
I got to know, how did Tom Caron make the cut in your Hall of Fame speech? I'm shocked.
Well, since I joined Ness, and, you know, you sit there, and just like Johnny Pesky and the rest of the guys, you watch the guys that has the experience, and you watch the guys that are good, and that's what I did. By hooking up with TC, it made me, I don't know, my wife said I've gotten a little better. So she gave all the credit to TC, so I had to give TC his props.
Well, the good thing is I've never dressed as well as after watching him for a few years now. So my man,
it's kind of,
I still can't enter his league,
I gotta say,
but
it's
I can knock on the door.
I got to tell you, Jim, it's kind of ridiculous. I mean, you're putting everybody else in the media to shame. I mean, the pocket squares, I mean, the suits, it's just kind of unfair.
Come on, Michael. You got some class now. Well, just watch TC. You know, TC's getting better. I'm getting better. So we're all going to spread it around a little bit.
Hey, Jim, I got to ask you. I'm going to say this right off the top because I just said it before you came on. I said anybody who watched your Hall of Fame speech closely knows why you wanted to do this interview at 12:15.
You're right. So let's hurry up.
Why is that, Jim?
Because of the Young and the Restless.
Young and the Restless,
oh, no.
Coming on at 12:30.
Come on now.
And the day is getting pretty juicy.
Come on. You got to be kidding me. The Young and the Restless. And they make fun of me for some of the stuff I watch.
That's what he said in the speech. He was watching Young and the Restless when he got the call from the Hall of Fame.
This is unbelievable.
Okay. That's true, yeah.
Okay, so I'm gonna ask some questions now because I don't want to keep you away from the Young and the Restless, Jim.
All right, Michael.
Tell me now, when you got into the Hall of Fame, it seems like watching your speech and watching you last week when your number was retired at Fenway, it seemed like you were able to just relax. I don't know where that came from. Was there tension of not getting into the Hall of Fame? Was there something there? Because you seemed much more at ease once all of that was over. Is that accurate?
Yeah, once it was all over. But, you know, before the Hall of Fame, I knew I was going to get two calls. I had the one from the Hall of Fame of Pam Ganley. And it wasn't for Pam, so when Jeff called, Jeff said, "You in?" And I said, "Jeff, thank you very much. I'm happy that I got this call from you because I didn't want another call from Pam." And he said, "Well, are you excited?" I said, "Yes, I'm excited, but I'm doing something right now." I said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm watching my soap opera." He said, "Okay, you go ahead and watch the soap opera. When you finish, call me back."
Jim, looking back at those 14 years leading up to that, and you and I have talked about this over the years, you never lobbied. You know, I think a lot of guys would have gotten out there and say, "Listen, this is why I belong in the Hall of Fame." Why didn't you ever do that? Why did you think the numbers should speak for themselves?
Well, I thought that was a key thing. That's the key thing of playing baseball. I think when you play baseball, you look for the numbers. And, of course, Brush Johnny did an outstanding job. But my whole thing about the Hall of Fame, guys, to me, is that I think you should have maybe like a standard that if you have so many home runs, RBIs, forget about the on-base percentage, all the things that you're looking for in a Hall of Famer. Then you have the young guys that they can say, "Hey, look, I can make these numbers. I can be a Hall of Famer." But without telling them and having the writers to vote, it's really tough. Because if you go back and you think about all the Hall of Famers that were on the podium, they were talking about guys that they thought that should be in the Hall of Fame, and they're not. They would tell you about guys that say, "Hey, man, this guy was better than I was. This guy was a tremendous ball player." But no one ever heard about these guys. But the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, they were saying that, hey, these guys are top players. These guys dominated for a while. You know, a good example, you look at someone like Andre Dawson, but playing in Montreal, maybe he didn't get all the publicity. You look at a guy like Lee Smith, and all of a sudden he's in there with Hoffman, Rivera, and Eck, and guys like that. But, you know, no one have said anything about Lee Smith.
But, Jim, if you think – I think I disagree with you on this point. Let's say a guy – I said this to TC earlier. A guy like Rafael Palmeiro, even before we found out that he was taking steroids,
okay.
He had the numbers, but I never really looked at him as a dominant guy. When people looked at you, they said he was one of the most dominant guys for a decade. Even though Palmeiro had the numbers, did you ever look at him as like the best first baseman in the game? So I don't know if you have a number standard and a guy reaches it, does that make him a Hall of Famer just because he achieved certain numbers?
Well, I see what you're saying too. Also, you can also look at Cal Ripken. Did Cal Ripken dominate?
And he was just around for a long time.
Did Tony Gwynn dominate?
Well.
No, he didn't dominate. But tell me this. If you had an opportunity to start your team with Tony Gwynn or Jim Rice, which one you start with?
Jim Rice.
Okay, then. He was a dominant player.
But look at those numbers.
Longevity.
That's right.
Batting titles and things like that. Hey, those are great. But when you're looking at a team, you're looking at someone that goes out and say to yourself, hey, I want somebody to drive this guy in. You know, if you go back and look at Tony Gwynn, at one time they had Tony batting third and batting fourth, no run production. They put him back at first. So a lot of times it's certain situations where you can be a dominant player, but you're a dominant player in certain situations. Not in a situation where you got to drive in runs or hit home runs.
So and that's impact. That's what we were talking about before.
So impact on the game. So you don't think these guys who are like, you know, 330, 345 hitters with, you know, 7 home runs, 8 home runs, you don't look at those as dominant players?
No, I don't. Okay, let me ask you this. How many guys did you see up there on the podium that was like that?
And you can't even say Ricky, because Ricky had an impact in different ways. Ricky didn't hit a lot of home runs, but
he
hit home runs for a leadoff guy and stole a lot of bases.
That's right. So, but, you know, it's like apples and oranges, but the guys that are in the Hall of Fame, evidently they deserved it. Writers thought so, and they're there. But when you're talking about dominant players, I think that's what you need to talk about. How can you determine a dominant player, an impact player?
Well, that's where I think sometimes, and we had this conversation before about the writers and how many guys there are voting now, you know. I think the Veterans Committee is a better way to do it. Not that that should be the only way, but the veterans, from what I understand, spend a lot of time talking about, well, listen, I faced this guy. You know, they'll call in the guys, you know, it's the guys in the Hall of Fame, the guys who played in that era. Jim, it seems to me that the guys who played with and against those guys would be the best judge of it.
Right. I agree with you 100%. But, you know, those guys are not voting, so the writers are voting. So I think you have to look at the writers that are voting and ask them what's the dominant player. And evidently, some of the guys in the Hall of Fame, they thought were dominant players, and so that's what you have to live on.
Who's a guy you faced, a pitcher you faced? Does anybody come to mind who's not in the Hall of Fame, and you said, man, how is this guy not in? He used to give me trouble, or I just thought he was great. Is there anybody like that?
He didn't give me any trouble, but I think this guy went to the mound every day. And the team that he played for probably wasn't a good team, but he went to the mound every day, and that was Burt Barlevin.
And there's a lot of people think he should be in the Hall of Fame.
You know, Burt, I mean, you know, when you go into Minnesota, man, I got to face Burt, you know, and that's what you thought.
He was the pitcher that you thought about, like we talk about you at the plate. When you were up there on Sunday, a couple Sundays ago now, Jim, 51 guys showed up, and I know one of them meant the most to you. What did it mean to you to have Yaz there, and how much he meant to you as a young player?
Well, he meant a lot. You know, Yaz told me, I guess, maybe 4 or 5 years ago or whenever, he said, look, Jim, if you're ever in the Hall of Fame, I'll be there. And he kept his word. He came in on Saturday night. I saw him down at the party, and he said, I'm giving you 8 minutes. After 8 minutes, I'm gone. And that's the way he was.
I think he took an extra minute, and that's all he gave.
And I think it was Frank Robinson, K-Line, Whitey Ford. There must have been about 4 or 5 guys. They looked at me. After I went back, I said, you are pretty good. I said, what you mean? He said, in order to get your Skrimsky here, you had to be good. So that, like, you know, it's like a pat on my shoulder that I was glad to get to get your ass there.
Now, I wasn't here at the time, but I've heard stories. Jim Rice in the media, he didn't get into the Hall of Fame because some of these guys had an agenda against him. One, I want to know, from your perspective, how did you view the media? What was your relationship with the media? And are some of the stories exaggerated?
They're mostly exaggerated. I think, you know, when I started, Michael, we only had like four or five writers, you know, Cliff King, Larry Clapton, Jake Liston, guys like that. So these guys were older guys. These guys were the guys that had been around baseball ever since Pesci had been around. And I always respect my elders. It more was the new guys than anything else. And, Michael, I got in trouble a lot of time because I didn't talk about my teammates. I didn't talk about the front office. If you want to talk about me, what I did, or I screwed up, I didn't get no hits, I would sit there and talk every day. As far as talking to me about hitting a home run, winning a game, I got paid for that. Right, you know, to me, you sort of write what you saw that night. I wasn't the type of guy to pat myself on the back. I was more of a background person. But when the team lost, I was there every night. I did not run. I did not hide. We won, I was gone. And maybe I got in trouble for that by leaving. But, when you win, I don't think you have anything to say. Hey, we won the game, went 4-for-4, 3-for-4. But when you lost, that's when you have to stay there and you have to take the bumps, the grinds, and everything else.
See, it's interesting. You actually were most guys are going to skip out after a loss or a tough night. You were the opposite of that. And,
yeah, I was.
And of course, now I got to point out, Michael, you know, he's a member of the media.
Right? How about that? He's a media member. You're a media guy now.
In fact, Jim, I don't want to speak out of school here, but the other day, Jason Bay came out. You were on the phone trying to track down the story. You're like a reporter now.
It's called connection.
Hall of Fame connections.
Inside scoop.
Now, I saw one thing you said from Cooperstown I thought was very interesting. There was a piece done with a lot of Hall of Famers were asked to give their opinion on performance-enhancing drugs. And you gave a very strong opinion. You said, if you have been caught using something, you do not belong in the Hall of Fame. Could you just elaborate on that?
Well, it seemed like if you were doing that, you're cheating the other guys that are up there. Why should you sort of be in a category with guys that never really cheated in the game compared to a guy that has cheated in the game? And so now you set an example for the young guys. Hey, it's okay to use steroids. You can get in the Hall of Fame, but just make sure you know how to use them or use them at the right time. So I think you sent it a bad example. And one guy was asking me, I was in New York maybe like 2 weeks ago, he said, why don't you have guys in the Hall of Fame, but guys who use steroids, you put them on another wall. And so I was bringing up other things. I mean, well, if you're going to do it, you got to make a Pete Rose wall and you got to make a Cedeno wall. So you got four walls there. You know, you got one for gamblers. I don't want to get into the other part, but you know what I'm saying. But you got to have four walls. Guys that, you know, legit, steroids, gamblers, and other kind of guys.
And if you don't think they're legit, maybe they don't belong in the Hall of Fame at all, whether it's a separate wall or not. Maybe they just don't belong in Cooperstown.
Right, but, you know, he was just asking me. So he said, hey, what do you think? Just have another wall with the guys with the steroids. So I say, hey, look, I'm not a writer. You got to talk to the writers about voting on that. You're part of the media because you're asking me the question. You got a camera and a microphone, and so I think you have to talk to the guys that are voting for the Hall of Fame.
But, Jim, we saw those numbers get so inflated right after you played. You know, 89, 90, 91, 92. This is when we suddenly started to see the dramatic increase in home runs each year, in career home runs. Do you think those numbers affected you over the 14 years? One of the reasons you didn't get in was because of that explosion in offense, which we now know was linked to performance-enhancing drugs.
They did, but my numbers, TC, I could have hit more home runs, but I mean, it's like you're a team guy, and so you got to do what's best for the team. But when you're talking about sports being inflated, you got novice equipment, you got guys, small ballparks, you got more teams. I don't think the teams are as strong as when I played, and you got so many variations of the video. You got video, you got small ballparks, teams not as strong. And you got novice equipment, so you got a lot of variations there. The guys should have more home runs to be more inflated than when we played.
You know, obviously there are some guys who have been called out now. The list that was supposed to be anonymous is not anonymous anymore, and names keep leaking out. Did you ever suspect? You didn't necessarily have to call anybody out, but did you ever suspect guys were doing something even before we knew those names? Did you ever sit back and say, "Wait a minute"? I can't imagine somebody hitting a ball that far or hitting that type of pitch that far. That something is not right here.
Yeah. One of them used to play at Baltimore. I'm not calling his name, but you can figure it out. But, you know, you thought about that, and some guys saw that. You know, the big thing is when you see guys that are not home run hitters, and all of a sudden they become home run hitters. and they become hitting balls as far as not 320, 340. They begin hitting like 380 and 400 feet. You know, you think about it. You look at his bat and say he's using the same bat, and you look at the guy and look at the same guy and say this guy wasn't like that a year ago or 2 years ago.
And I want to ask you, I know I got to ask you fast because the Young and Restless is fast approaching. What did you think of Manny? When Manny's name is on the 2003 list and he was suspended this year, we saw Manny up close for many years. What did you think when you found out that his name was out there?
Well, I never went inside the clubhouse and watched Manny as far as taking his clothes off. But I you know, just listening and talking to people make you think that I guess everything changed, I guess, when he and Jack McCormick had a little altercation or something like that. It seemed like his attitude and everything changed. So I really wasn't in the clubhouse, so I can't say. But I always thought Manny was a good hitter, and they was telling me that Manny used to go at the ballpark in the morning and work out. You never just see Manny work out. So Manny worked out a lot of times in the morning when no one was there. So I thought he was just going to work out in the morning. You know, that's all I can say, and that's it.
Well, Jim, I just real quickly on this team, you know, we saw Victor Martinez come in. We know what this team's got now. We saw that ridiculous amount of offense. Talk about small ballparks, Camden Yards. We forget about Camden Yards. You spent so much time talking about the new Yankee Stadium. But you look at this offense now. They got enough? You like this offense? Do they have enough to get it done?
Yes, I like this. I like this offense. But now Tito's having trouble. He doesn't know if he's going to play Veritek or he's going to play Martinez or what you're going to do with Uke, what you're going to do with Lowe. I think you got to go with the strongest lineup. So if you go with the strongest lineup, you see the Veritek may not play that much because even though you got a switch hitter, you got a young man that's probably a better hitter than Veritek. So you have to do a lot of flip-flopping around there. Which one are you going to stay with?
Jim, we always appreciate the time. We don't want to keep you away from your soaps. Now, TC,
I got one last question for you.
Right. I bet it's going to be a great question,
Friend Diane out in Framingham just emailed in and says, I have to ask you if you think Nikki's going to go through with the marriage to Paul.
Well, in the soap opera digest, she thinks that she's going to end up marrying Victor.
So well, there you go.
Victor, they're going to fall in the same situation here. And so I think Paul's going to come out and realize a couple more things of about his sister there and see what's going on.
I'm trying to get this sponsored on Nesson, a nightly soap opera update with Jim.
Aside of Jim Rice that nobody knew. I didn't know
this. The kinder, gentler Jim Rice.
This is amazing. But, Jim, we appreciate the time, man. Congratulations.
Thanks,
it was great.
Hey, Jim, where are we eating tonight? Big question. Where do you want to eat tonight?
I wish I'd get there. We'll talk about it.
You think about it. I'll see you this afternoon.
Hey, TC.
Yo.
Since we're on the air, I think we ought to have the guys over at Beckett's Big Burger, bring us some burgers over there.
You know what? McGreevy's over in Boylston. He's been lobbying for that all year. McGreevy, send us some of those Beckett burgers.
That's right, McGreevy.
You can't finish it.
He'll share it with the crew. He's a good man.
All right, Jim. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Jim.
All right, guys. Take care.
Take care. Hall of Famer Jim Rice.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today. Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.